The Cardinals offense finally jumped on an opposing starter, and Sonny Gray was good too. But after an untimely error, the back end of the bullpen was called into duty again. And you already know how that went, coming up on B-Shafe Daily. What's going on, everyone, and welcome in to this edition of B-Shafe Daily. Brendan Schaefer here with you in the late evening hours of Saturday, April 27th, 2024. The Cardinals have done enough to claim the series at Citi Field against the New York Mets. At the very worst, they'll take 2 of 3 from the Mets this weekend in Queens. Day game on Sunday afternoon to see whether the Cardinals are able to claim a sweep for the first time in 2024. But on Saturday, we saw a version of the Cardinals that I think fans have been longing to see early in the year, where the offense was able to jump on an opposing starting pitcher, get a cushion for their starter, and ride it into victory. There were still elements of this game that maybe didn't quite fit the narrative and the script that you'd like to see in a perfect, idealistic world. But as we know, we don't often live in that type of world. So we'll talk about the Cardinals' 7-4 win on Saturday, as once again, the back end of the bullpen was required to be able to get this thing done. We'll talk about why that was, as Nolan Arenado made an uncharacteristic error that ended up coming back to bite the Cardinals, and particularly Sonny Gray, who had been dealing to that point in the game, but ended up getting into a spot of trouble in the fifth inning. And it was a troubled spot that would not have been nearly as difficult to handle if not for the Arenado error. So we'll talk about that. And once again, the way that it led to the Cardinals turning to their relief aces, the A squad, in the 7th, 8th, and 9th innings of the game at Citi Field on Saturday. The good news is those guys are absolute nails. We'll continue to give flowers to JoJo Romero, Andrew Kittredge, and Ryan Helsley, but we'll also mention and ask the question, how is their usage collectively so far this weekend going to potentially have an impact on things come Sunday afternoon? Because the Cardinals certainly would have liked to have been able to get through this game on Saturday without using any of those relievers, I would imagine. And with the way the offense had started the game and the way Sonny Gray got things kicked off early, you figured that was going to be a pretty distinct possibility. So as the Cardinals do win 3 in a row for the first time all year, and as they do continue to get just splendid performances from their bullpen, there are maybe some negative feelings about the fact that the bullpen was needed in the first place. We'll get into all of it coming up on B-Shafe Daily. Real quick, though, I want to remind you guys to subscribe to this channel on YouTube by clicking the red button in the lower right-hand corner of your screen. If you're interested in St. Louis Cardinals content all season long, every single day for the last month. Today, as I post this, will be the 28th, Sunday morning, the 28th of April. And I've done a video every single day, at least one, sometimes multiple, every day since March 28th, the season opener out in Los Angeles. So you're getting a lot of Cardinals content here. I hope you guys are enjoying it. And if you're new to the channel, now's the time to get on board. And I will also add the link in the description of this video below. The link will get you to Spotify, where if you like to go ad-free to listen to the podcast, you can do that over there by becoming a subscriber on Spotify. But you can also follow for free on Spotify if you prefer to listen to B-Shafe Daily through that avenue. Just go ahead and search B-Shafe Daily over on Spotify or even Apple Podcasts if you're inclined, and you'll be able to find the podcast there. But let's dive into the way this game unfolded for the Cardinals on Saturday. I mentioned it, their first time in 2024 with a 3-game winning streak. It comes as no surprise that Sonny Gray has something to do with it. He was ridiculous until getting into a little bit of trouble there in the fifth inning. But Sonny Gray, once again, 6 innings, just 4 hits allowed in this game. Now, also allowed 4 runs, but only one of those runs earned, because the Arenado error happens, as we'll get into, in the fifth inning and leads to a crooked number that otherwise would have had the Cardinals out of the inning, because a lot of that action coming with 2 outs, and part of that action, the home run hit by Pete Alonso, I believe that was his 200th of his career. 9 strikeouts, though, for Gray. The 3 walks is something that contributes a little bit to danger in this outing, but man, was his stuff good once again. I think I saw a quote in the story from the Associated Press that one of the Mets hitters just basically said his pitches were disappearing. Now you see me, now you don't. I mean, just ridiculous stuff from Sonny Gray. There's no other way to describe it, but you had a bit of a different feeling watching this game unfold, at least in the early portion, if you're a Cardinals fan, I would imagine. Because we've talked about how the way they've won some of these games recently has been really intense, and there's really not a break or a moment to rest at any point throughout these games because the offense had been coming along pretty slowly, and even if they have ultimately found some ways to contribute in recent days, it's usually toward the tail end of the game and coming either right before they're able to knock the starter out of the contest or in some cases coming against the bullpen as they're tacking on the insurance runs late where, yeah, by the end of it, what, they win 5-1 on Wednesday and you're thinking, okay, comfortable win, but that was not the path to get there. So for the Cardinals to get on the board early, I think was really something helpful that allowed Sonny Gray to sort of have the rhythm that, you know, that he probably would have had anyway, but to really be comfortable with where the game was for the majority of this contest. The Cardinals wasted no time getting on the board in the first inning with 4 runs, and how good is it to see the top of the St. Louis order and the middle of the order, for that matter, contribute to that kind of rally? Donovan with a double to lead it off, Wilson Contreras with a base hit to advance him, Nolan Arenado has the RBI hit to get things going in the game, and then Paul Goldschmidt with a really nice swing to double into deep center field. Bang, just like that, it's 3-0. And later in the inning, Mason Winn was able to get an RBI base hit to score Paul Goldschmidt. So 4 runs in the first inning, that's exactly what Cardinals fans have been looking for. And honestly, that's the type of offense that this team is supposed to have. It's not going to happen every game that you get to the starter, but they took Adrian Hauser to the woodshed in that first inning for 4 runs. That's what you got to do. You have to be able to set a tone. When you have guys like Donovan, Contreras, Nupar, Arenado, Goldschmidt, that's your 1-5. There has to be an expectation that at a decent enough clip, you're able to get those guys going at the very beginning of the game. It just seems sometimes this year. And again, I'm talking negative on a day where this did not happen and the Cardinals came through offensively the way you would like to see. But to make this sort of the precedent rather than the aberration, this is the way it needs to look for the Cardinals. With that group of hitters, it's kind of like they settle into the game. They're waiting for the game to sort of unfold. And, all right, my second time at bat, maybe I'll be settled in a little bit. And we can. I'm not saying that's something being done intentionally, of course, but it's just the feeling you get watching it sometimes. Correct me if I'm wrong in the comments on this, but there have been times where you just sort of feel like the offense is going through the motions in the early portion of these games, and that lets these starters off the hook, I think, more often than really you should, because if you're able to jump on these guys early, it can change the entire complexion of a game. And it ended up being that the Cardinals needed every little bit of that first inning rally to ultimately win this game 7-4 because of the things that happened later. So you appreciate the ability for the Cardinals to come out swinging, and they were able to do that against Adrian Hauser. That's a guy that the team is pretty familiar with from his time. He spent lots of years in Milwaukee. I don't know how many years he was there, but that's honestly, when I saw Hauser was pitching today, I had kind of forgotten that he was even on the Mets, but had spent enough time with Milwaukee that you knew the Cardinal hitters were pretty familiar with him. Paul Goldschmidt came in with some pretty solid numbers in a pretty good sample as well against Adrian Hauser. Arenado and Contreras, though, had struggled against him with a 125 and a 143 batting average, a 125 for Wilson, 143 for Arenado, in 16, 14 at-bats, like a pretty decent sample size there, too. OPS around 500. So good to see that even though those guys were familiar with the opposing starter in maybe not a positive way, they were able to both be part of the rally to get things going in the first inning. Cardinals jump out to a 4-0 lead. They continued to add on, which you absolutely have to do. You have to be able to score in multiple innings. And they did so in this one with the Nolan Gorman RBI double that plated the other Nolan, Arenado, there in the third inning. And that was kind of a funny scenario playing out because, and I've talked about this, love Nolan Arenado, right? You love everything about him, except he is probably one of the slowest players in Major League Baseball. Just not fleet of foot. And he took a walk to lead off the third inning. Cardinals seemed like they might end up stranding him. Goldie struck out. I spoke too early on the Goldschmidt thing, by the way. I sent out a tweet after his double in the first inning, scored a couple of runs on the swing. I said, Paul Goldschmidt is teetering toward being back. Like, his swing is back. He's looking great. And he still had a pretty good day, going 2-for-5 in this one. Couple of runs scored, obviously the RBIs that he accumulated in the first inning. But then his other three at-bats ended in strikeouts. But the OPS is up to 602, steadily been climbing in recent days. There were some at-bats taken by the heart of the Cardinals order where they're just kind of looking. Arenado had one where I thought his controller had been unplugged late in the game. He struck out looking, and I don't know if he offered at any of the pitches. Might have been offered at strike one, but then strike two and three, he looked at him. Was kind of weird. And Goldschmidt had some ABs that looked maybe not the most comfortable and struck out three times. Like I said, still a good day, but I do think I jumped the gun a little bit on sending the tweet that he was teetering toward being, quote, back. And he has looked much better in recent days. And again, today was a good day. I just thought, I looked up, you know, a few innings later, and I was like, damn, he struck out the next three times after I tweeted that. I'm telling you, there's nobody that has the ability to tweet something and have the opposite happen almost immediately and with incredible consistency like I do it. It happens all the time. It happened Wednesday in the Jordan Montgomery game. I said, oh, is there ever any other plausible outcome besides Jordan Montgomery going to shove against the Cardinals? And I even had the thought process as I was about to hit send on the tweet, like, you know, he's only got such and such a pitch count. He probably is going to come back out for the next inning, maybe two. Why don't you just wait to send the tweet? Because then you save yourself the embarrassment if the Cardinals end up getting to him and chasing him from the game here. But then I was like, well, you know, there's a lot of my friends out there want these Cardinals, these Redbirds, to do well. So, hey, worst comes to worst, I send a tweet that makes me look like a dummy, but the Cardinals end up doing a nice job and getting to Montgomery, and we don't have to have this conversation about, oh, the Cardinals should have signed Jordan Montgomery, and then I have to do that whole thing again on Twitter and on YouTube and stuff, which we did end up talking a ton about that, but from more of the perspective of why they didn't sign him rather than, you know, having to have me fend off the YouTube comments and have folks telling me, look, I told you they should have signed him, which, again, if you felt that way, it's totally cool. Again, we did kind of dive in on Wednesday's B-Shafe Daily after that game as to why it didn't end up happening. But I totally understand your perspective as a Cardinals fan of why you might have wanted him back. It just, I think it worked out for all involved that he ended up not beating the Cardinals in that game on Wednesday against Arizona. Anyway, my ability to tweet things that happen in the literal opposite sense right after I tweet them is uncanny and, in my opinion, unparalleled. But Goldie struck out after Arenado's walk in the third. Burley flied out, and then Gorman, you're coming up going, all right, Gorman's kind of been hot, cold, has been, you know, struggled a little bit. What are you going to get from him in this AB? Is it going to be kind of back to the norm where, oh, the Cardinals scored in the first inning, that's great, but then they sort of mail it in the rest of the way and kind of rest on their laurels with that lead? Gorman strokes a double into the right field corner. Arenado from first base is able to score, and Nolan Gorman ends up on third. I think he advanced on the throw. Yeah, it was a double for Gorman, not a triple, even though he got to third base. He advanced on the throw home as, I don't even think Arenado slid, but he was able to just barely beat the throw by a step or two and cross home plate safely. But to watch him try and score from first and do so successfully, I thought, man, that's a worst-case scenario for Arenado, because if it was just a standard double, there wouldn't have been the expectation that he needs to score on it. But it was into the corner, and it rattled around a little bit, and it's like, yeah, you better get on your horse, big boy. But Arenado did, and that was something to watch. Scoring from first, great to see that swing by Nolan Gorman, too, by the way. He went 2-for-4 in the game, scored a run, and had that RBI. The OPS at 647 for him. So slowly but surely, you're seeing, you know, Burleson's was in the 500s for a long time. He hit the home run yesterday, and then today, 1-for-2, also reached base via walk. So the on-base percentage for him is climbing, and he's at 685 on the OPS. We said Goldschmidt was above 600. We see Gorman close to 650 at this point. Mason Wynn still holding steady above 800. A lot of these guys are starting to creep their way back up. Brandon Donovan had come way down. He's up to 692 now with a 2-for-4 day, RBI and a run scored as well. Lars Nootbaar is the one guy that I would say that's still sort of trending in the wrong direction. He looked really good when he first came off the injured list. Today at 0 for 4, but did reach via walk. But he's at a 184 average and a 616 OPS. I don't think it would be crazy maybe to move him around in the order a little bit. Now that we're kind of doing that, right? Now that there's been a willingness, Ollie has moved Goldie to the five hole, and we've seen that be maintained. I think it was a great move to move Wilson Contreras up when they did into that two spot, and he was the perfect candidate to replace Goldie in that role if you were going to move Paul Goldschmidt down. Contreras has done a really nice job. 1 for 5 with a run scored for him today, still holding serve with a 952 OPS. But the way this game began, I'm long-winded in the way that I talk about it, but the Cardinals scoring early and scoring often was a key here. They pick up another run in the top of the fifth inning. So three different innings of the first five, they're able to come away with at least one run. That's all you need. You need to consistently be knocking on the doorstep of putting runs on the board. You're not going to score every inning, but if you can score in about half the innings and maybe find one of those numbers to be relatively crooked, like the four was in the first for St. Louis today. They scored in four innings and they put up seven runs. That is the blueprint. I'm not saying they're going to score seven every game, but if you can have a two or three run inning and then score in a couple of other innings and you end up with five or six, that is the way that this Cardinals team is going to find themselves in a much better position. And ideally, that can combine itself with sometimes you're not going to need Ryan Helsley to pitch to win a baseball game. They haven't lived in that world yet this year. That is a mythical place at this point in time for the St. Louis Cardinals. I really thought they were going to take a visit there this afternoon, but then we'll talk about what happened in the fifth inning. And that's what makes, by the way, the insurance runs and the ability to continue adding on so important, is sometimes things don't go your way and your 10-time Gold Glove third baseman makes an inexplicable error. I don't know what was happening on that play with Arenado. I'm not in New York this weekend. I'm at home in St. Louis, so I have no idea what was said about it after the game, any of it. It was just he muffed it. There's no other way to say it. It was a routine play. I think because it was hit softly, he was charging it and trying to be aggressive with it, because if you sit back on that ball, maybe you don't have the time to quite set your feet for the throw as much as you'd like. You know, these infielders, they do like to kind of be in rhythm and double pump their throw. It's not something that necessarily has to happen, but I think some guys are most comfortable when it does. And so maybe that's what Arenado was trying to do, is just make sure if I charge this ball, I'm going to be in rhythm rather than I'm waiting on it and then I have to sort of rush the throw or just not have the level of time that I'm comfortable with. So be aggressive. Like, there's nothing wrong with that, but he just kind of mistimed his step and it didn't happen. And an error was made on the play, which leads to a whole variety of issues for the Cardinals and for Sonny Gray, because that's how the inning leads off. And then I will say to the defense of, well, there's no defending Arenado for the play. It was just a bad play. But he's a human being, and he's going to make errors. Even a 10-time Gold Glover is going to make errors. It reminds me back of the Victor Scott play earlier this year where he just flat-out dropped a ball in center field, and you can make the commentary of, well, it was raining and this or that. He took a route and got turned around. He dropped the ball. Doesn't mean he's a bad defensive player, and the same thing is true for Arenado in this spot. But it really did end up coming back to haunt the Cardinals, as it often seems to do. Like, if Arenado makes an error like that, it's jarring. It's not that it's never happened before. It's happened from time to time. But it almost seems like when it does happen, bad things tend to follow, because it's like something's off with the matrix right now. If Arenado is not handling a routine, and this wasn't like he was trying to make a tough play. It was, you know, softly hit. He was charging in on it, and he just mistimed his step with putting the glove down and being able to secure the baseball and do what he needed to do on the play. So the error happens. Well, where you do get into trouble, and what I was getting ready to say as far as in defense of Arenado, there are other things that contributed in this inning to the Cardinals giving up a crooked number. The walk to Brett Beatty is, Sonny Gray had three walks today. That would probably be, again, I wasn't in New York, but I would imagine what he said post-game was, that's the stuff that I want to stay away from. It's uncharacteristic for what Gray wants to be, because he wants to attack hitters and go right at guys. He walks Beatty, gets a strikeout of Narvaez, but then there's a wild pitch that advanced the base runners, so that when Brandon Nimbo gets his base hit, a couple of runs score, He strikes out Lindor. So, like, he's still pitching well in this inning. That's why it's a little bit difficult to go, how do you judge the day for Sonny Gray? He gives up four runs. Okay, well, only one of them earned. And let's look at the inning where all the runs were scored. What happened? Well, he still struck out the side. He struck out J.D. Martinez, Francisco Lindor, and Omar Narvaez. But unfortunately, in the middle there was Pete Alonso that got the Mets to four. And suddenly you're tensing up a little bit. If you're watching this game, you're like, yeah, that's familiar. This is a way a Cardinal win in 2024 just has to go. It's the only option. You don't get the choice of having it be free and easy and not having to worry in the late innings as a fan and not having to worry about using your primary relief pitchers. That was the real key that I thought the Cardinals were going to get the benefit of because of their early and frequent scoring. I thought this was going to be a day where you're going to be able to rest those guys. You've leaned heavily on Jojo Romero, Andrew Kittredge, and Ryan Helsley so far. They've been unbelievable, but it doesn't necessarily mean you want to continue to do that, especially on a day where your offense picks you up and you have your ace on the mound. This was a recipe that should have been pretty cut and dry for the Cardinals to be able to bring in whoever you wanted. If it's Gallegos in that second grouping or Ryan Fernandez, Sonny was probably going to go seven if he doesn't get into a little bit of danger there in the fifth and have to pitch around all that stuff. He probably has a pitch count where they're very comfortable letting him go seven. He ends up going six on 92 pitches for the day. But if he had perhaps gotten that first out the way that he expected to and then carve out those next couple of strikeouts, it ends up being a situation where, well, you give up one run probably, right? Because there was a two-run hit that happened, but the Tyrone Taylor wouldn't have been on base for that. Again, butterfly effect, and you don't always know exactly the way an inning is going to play out. But when Brandon Nimmo gets that base hit, it wouldn't have been a two-run hit. You maybe score the runner from the Brett Beatty walk, but even then you probably don't score because does he overcook the wild pitch to Narvaez, on the strikeout? Or does that maybe not play out the same way because he's not worried about the guy on second base or whatever the case would have been? So he pitched well even in the inning where he gave up four runs outside of the one pitch to Pete Alonso, which, look, I say this all the time when it comes to other pitchers. Oh, well, you can't exactly just say, well, he pitched great except for A, B, C, or D. Pitched great except for the home runs he gave up. Like, yeah, that kind of stands to reason. And I you don't want to ever see Sonny Gray make an excuse for a moment like that. He's not going to blame the error, I'm sure. And honestly, it's just a pitch to Alonso. And maybe I'm just giving Sonny the benefit of the doubt because he is the ace of this team. But the pitch was pretty well located off the outer portion of the plate. I think it would have been in the strike zone. Would have been kind of on the black there on the outside portion. So maybe catching a little bit too much of the plate for a power hitter like that, but he just served it the other way and it left the park, which for a cold day, all the players were wearing their ski masks. Arenado and Mason Wynn had different kind of headgear on to fight off the cold. So he just barely poked it out to the right field side, opposite field home run. That's just Pete Alonso. He's a really good hitter. As we know, he's a big, strong guy, of course, and he beat him. Now, you could look back and say, you didn't give Steven Matz the same benefit of that doubt when Ollie Marmol was saying that he just flat out got beat that day by guys making good swings. But there's a difference when you look at the home run that Steven Matz gave up to Christian Walker. That was an 84-mile-per-hour changeup right over the center dead heart of the plate. I look at this pitch location from Sonny. I think it was honestly a pretty good pitch. I'm watching it now. Talked about it a moment ago, but I wanted to go back and rewatch it to make sure I remembered it properly. I don't even think it was in the strike zone. FoxTrax showed it off the plate, 93. StatCast had it 92 and change, but that's just fastball away trying to get a guy to, you know, maybe that's just executed the location, but maybe not the best location for Alonso if he's able to serve it out to right field that way. But that's just a good pitcher-batter battle and the hitter coming out on top in that situation. Sonny is constantly thinking out there on the mound, so I am sure there is a reason for that location. If it's one that he's hoping either he's going to swing through this because it's a fastball and I've got my good stuff, or maybe I dot it up on the outside corner, he doesn't swing, and I get the called strike, or I'm trying to just throw this pitch, whatever the result ends up being, intentionally a little bit off the plate so that I can set something up inside and come back inside to do this or that. There are a variety of reasons there might have been there. Bottom line, it wasn't a bad pitch by Sonny Gray. You don't necessarily expect that result. That's the difference. It's the location of the two pitches that I think the manager can't really come out after one and say, yeah, outside of this or whatever. Well, okay, that can be true. He might have had good stuff for the day, but the ones that he got punished on is where you need to be judged on, and it doesn't help either to load it up with walks before that. So that's what happened in that game for Mats against Arizona. Whereas with Gray, it did happen that he had a walk in the inning, and so I will harp on that in the same way that I imagine Sonny Gray harps on it for himself. Free passes are usually going to come back to kill you, and if it's a free pass that happens right after an error was made, and the error was made by a Gold Glover, that part probably is not relevant to the statistic, but you just, narrative-wise, you feel like you're going to end up paying for that. And Sonny Gray ended up paying for it. Now, the good news is he didn't pay for it in a way that cost his team the game, but this is the kind of thing that we do want to bring up and pay attention to when we do these daily podcasts, because as we talked about early in the season when Kyle Gibson had his start against Miami on a Sunday, gave up 6 runs in the first inning, but made it through 6 innings and saved the bullpen as a result of that, we tracked that Philadelphia series and said, look at these guys that were available for these moments that would not have been if Gibson had, let's say, gone out after 3 or 4 innings and you would have needed more coverage from those relievers, potentially using marquee relievers that you don't really want to have to dip into for a game that looks lost before it ever really begins. But because of what Gibby was able to do, okay, here's the way that sets things up for the following series. Now, we do know they didn't win the following series against Philadelphia, but there was that extra inning game where Helsley was available. He pitched. It didn't go well because Bohm hits it over the bag. But we can track those things and say, we recognize that even though the result of that Philly series wasn't good, and maybe you end up winning 1 out of 3 against Philly, regardless of what Gibby does in innings 2 through 6 on Sunday, but the downstream effect was still such that you put yourself in a spot to win that Philly series, and it just didn't pan out for execution of the extra inning situation. You call it bad luck. You can say they just failed to execute in the moments where they needed to and blame the team for that. If you want to be critical, that's okay. You can absolutely do that. But at least then we follow the trail of why something happened and why it played out. And these bullpen things can be very instrumental in those situations. So that's why we talk about this game where there is a negative to what ends up happening there. It's not as simple as saying Arenado makes an error and maybe the Cardinals blow a save on Sunday in New York, or maybe they blow a save on Monday as they continue the road trip. It's not that simple, but you can see how these little things can sometimes add up. That's what's so interesting to me about a baseball season. And that's part of why I don't think they ever should shorten the season from 162 games. I think part of this is you're measuring a team the way a baseball team is meant to be measured, because these decisions and these factors absolutely do play a role more than once throughout a season. It happens over and over and over again that little things can come back to change the direction of your season, even if it doesn't happen that day. It's very interesting. I'm not kind of harping on this to be overly critical necessarily of the moment by Arenado or what happens after the fact with Gray walking a batter and taking a little bit too long to get out of that inning and giving up the 4 runs, obviously, which leads to, all right, now it's a save situation again. You're Aldie Marmol. What do? You go win that baseball game. You had those guys rested because they had the off day on Thursday. They all 3 pitched Friday, but guess what, baby? There's another win out there to be claimed, and the Cardinals are going to have this win. You may have to make a different decision with how you handle Sunday's game, but you don't know that you're going to have a 2-3 run lead on Sunday at any point in time. That's bird in the hand is better than however many in the bush may come down by saving a reliever for a situation that may never materialize, right? So I, again, am going to commend Ollie Marmol. Folks aren't going to like that, are they? I think he handled it right. He said, look, we've got a game to go win. Can't cry over the spilled milk that happened in the fifth inning. Got to just go decide the best way to win this game now. And, you know, maybe the best way to win that game is Sonny Gray pitching the seventh inning if we're in July and he's even that much more built up. But he is still coming off of that hamstrings. It's a cold day, right, in New York. So you're kind of thinking about that aspect of it. Is there going to be a between inning situation where you don't necessarily want to have something happen with Sonny? I think anytime you get very, very cold or very, very hot, there's the potential. It was 57 degrees was the weather. They certainly acted like it was a lot colder than that. Maybe it was 57 at first pitch. I don't really know. I think that's the way they measure it. And so you would think it would have gotten warmer, but maybe the weather front came through and it got actually worse as the game went. I don't know. But I feel like guys can cramp up and you have muscle issues when it's really hot and humid, or sometimes when it's cold. You just don't know. You just don't. Extreme temperatures of any kind, something to be aware of. And with the hamstring history with Gray, and he's up at 92 pitches, and you've got those guys rested enough to where they all pitched yesterday, but they've been pretty darn efficient. I mean, Kittredge is always efficient, it seems like. So he is the kind of guy that you may not... I know he hadn't done the back-to-back thing since his Tommy John until, like, I think last year with the Rays when he came back toward the end. I don't think he did any back-to-backs, but it's been something the Cardinals have integrated. And he said, I think all the way back to spring training is when I recall Jeff Jones telling me that he asked him about it. And he said, yeah, I am cool with it. It might have been first week of the season, whatever the case was, because I think it was around that John King situation when he came in the game against LA. But anyway, Kittredge doesn't seem to mind it. He's performing every single instance that they're asking him to do it. So long story short, and it's never a short story with me, they bring JoJo Kittredge-Helsley in. That's going to be the game plan. They're not going to stretch out Gray to 100 pitches. There's no real urgency to do that because you feel very good about your plan with the spots in the lineup that you are to have Romero come in the seventh inning where he's basically been coming in, and you make that happen. I think it's a really interesting situation. I understand that maybe tomorrow we're having a different conversation because you are going to be saying, well, how could Ollie bring in so-and-so and they lose 4-3 tomorrow because they blow a save, whatever. All right, we'll get to that when we get to it. But for now, you have to win the game that you can win. And Romero was lights out, 2 strikeouts in his inning. Kittredge gave up a base hit, but always finds a way around it, struck out a batter, scoreless inning, a 0.75 ERA. Romero is at 1.23. And Ryan Helsley comes out, has the ninth inning, got a little bit dicey, some soft contact hits against him, really nothing too egregious. The full count walk that loads the bases, I thought maybe that might have been in the zone, but I think it was a little bit low, so that's fair too. But gets the pop-up to end the game, and the Cardinals are winners, 7-4 out at Citi Field in New York. 2 wins, Cardinals win the series, so I send out the tweet. I played it for you guys last night from Frank Thomas. I'm not going to find it now, but I sent the tweet. I said, Mets have nothing to hold their heads down for, except they didn't play that well, and they gave away this series. I just took out the world part because it's not the World Series that's being played this weekend in Queens, but Cardinals did win the series. Now the question is, are they going to be able to sweep the series? They haven't had a ton of success in series finales so far this year. They've got 1 win in a finale. I believe that was the Oakland series where they finally got that monkey off their back. Actually, no, what am I talking about? They had a chance to sweep Oakland, failed to do it, and they just won the series finale that we've been talking about for like 20 minutes of this episode. Not 20 minutes, 3 minutes of this episode, where they beat Jordan Montgomery against Arizona. So that was their first win in a series finale, I believe, all season long. Yeah, that is the case. So now are they able to do it again and get their first sweep of the season? Well, I think you do have the right starting pitcher on the mound to have a chance to do it on Sunday. If it's not going to be Sonny Gray, I think Lance Lynn is maybe your next best option. Here's what's going to be challenging, though. Lance Lynn, let's go ahead and look through his game log so far this season. Because when you think in your mind, what's Lance Lynn? What's his role to this team? All right, he's going to eat some innings. He'll be the innings eater. That's not really been the case for him so far. Kind of the same way that you look at Miles Michaelis and say, oh, he's supposed to eat the innings and hasn't had a quality start in his last three. Now, this week when he went 5 2/3, gave up 2 earned runs, he was 1 out short of a quality start. That's a lot closer to what you do need to see from Michaelis as compared to his previous couple of starts where he gave up 5 runs and didn't get through the fifth. Like, that's 5 2/3 you will take. It's just still not quite the quality start. And the guy that threw 200 innings last year, you'd like to see him replicate that. So I can understand that because of his role, you might be a little bit more hesitant to crown him for a 5 2/3 2-run outing. I thought Cardinals fans should have been doing backflips, though, from that outing because of how he had looked the last couple of games, speaking still of Miles Michaelis, where it's like, is this guy going to get it back at any time soon? He was able to get it back in the series opener here in New York, and that was important because the Cardinals got the win. But nevertheless, we're talking about Lance Lynn and whether or not he's going to be able to eat the innings tomorrow on Sunday. That's going to be the key to this whole thing when you do know, all right, you probably have Gallegos and maybe he can even throw you a couple of innings, but he's been susceptible to the long ball this year. Okay, who else? Libertor should be rested and ready to go. If there's a spot in the lineup where they're going to face a tough lefty at bat, then that's probably Libertor's inning, potentially. Where else do you turn? I think you go to Ryan Fernandez. If Lance Lynn gives you 6 innings, 3 runs, and it's a 4-3 Cardinal lead going into the seventh, I think I give Ryan Fernandez the inning if the spot in the lineup makes sense for it. Or you at least consider him at some point for the opportunities. You could go Gallegos, though, because we know that Gallegos, the closer you get him toward the end of those games, it seems like he's a different pitcher and maybe has not been as effective. Historically in the ninth inning, and I typically don't believe in this, but there is maybe something a little bit different about pitching the ninth compared to those other innings, getting those final 3 outs of a game. Certain guys are more suited to it, I think, than others, and we don't need to harp on it with Gallegos, but I think it's been a bit of a struggle for him in past years, so they've generally avoided it. But tomorrow they're maybe going to be in a situation where you have to consider what that's going to look like. And again, because I'm not in New York, I don't exactly know what Ollie has said already or what he may say. I haven't seen coverage-wise if there was any answer to this. But as to whether Ollie Marmol has said who's going to maybe be available or not available out of that bullpen tomorrow, because I think you can probably bet that Helsley will not be available to go a third day in a row, ended up having a relatively taxing ninth inning with loading the bases and all, 24 pitches. Yeah, I think he's going to be down. But I will say, JoJo and Kittredge, 12 pitches and 11 pitches. So is there a world where one of those guys shows up to the ballpark Sunday morning and tells Ollie, you know, throws before the game as they do, just their general pregame routines, and one of those guys, if not both of them, go to Ollie and say, look, man, if this is a 3-2 game in the eighth, I'm the eighth and Kittredge is the ninth, or vice versa, like, bring it. That would be something, man. And you can't do it too often. You cannot do it too often. I know people just say, whatever, just get through it. But Kittredge threw 11 pitches in the game on Friday, 11 pitches in the game on Saturday, coming off that Tommy John relatively recently. That was 2022, that summer, middle of the summer, when Kittredge had his TJ. 11 pitches, day three. What do you think? Romero actually got 4 outs in the game on Friday, 15 pitches. So you kind of figure he's going to be out. And I wouldn't even, I don't care if Helsley comes to the ballpark tomorrow and he says he's great on Sunday. Threw 24 pitches. He only threw 9 on Friday. But that guy's, it's not that all three of them aren't important, but Helsley, only one of the three guys we're talking about, throws 102 with regularity. So you probably just, you say he's off limits regardless, but I would ask Kittredge and JoJo, or honestly, I would come, if I'm Ollie Marmol, these are the interpersonal things that I like to think about, like what makes a good manager. If I'm Ollie Marmol, I don't say anything to either of them until I kind of see him in the morning, But I don't ask, like, hey, what can you do for me? I let them do the talking. I let them come up to, I kind of watch, and it can be known that I'm watching. But if they want to offer it up, then maybe I go, okay, noted. Otherwise, status quo is probably guys aren't available. At least you can go in with that of, you know, if I go to a guy and say, hey, what do you got for me? Hopefully, and I think they probably do have the clubhouse environment with this team and the trust between manager, player, coach, player, etc. to say, yeah, this isn't, I feel like this is one where I should probably not go. But there also could be that, yeah, I've got an inning for you. I've got a batter for you. If there's a spot, you know, I've got an out for you. If there's a spot to end an inning where there's a jam and you need to get out of it. So three batter minimum is not a concern at that point, because as long as you get the out, you're out of it. And if you don't, well, you face the three batters trying to get the out, and then you probably get replaced. But maybe that's something you could see from either of those guys. Kittredge in particular, if he's, I want to know how Andrew Kittredge is waking up on Sunday morning. And again, all of this could be moot because the Cardinals would need to be in a tied game or a lead for it to even be relevant. And probably a lead specifically, because even with a tied game, I think they've seen enough from Ryan Fernandez to say, go get him, kid, or to Liberatore, if it's a lefty heavy portion of the lineup, to say, go get him, kid. I think they'll certainly be willing to do those things. You don't necessarily expect a John King to waltz in unless it's a down by a couple or down by one. But you've got some options out there. I'll just be curious to see if we see any of these guys out there or even as an option. Romero, Kittredge, Helsley. I'm going to say definitely no Helsley, but I won't rule it out for the other two. I think it would probably be the prudent thing to not. But that's what's important about this lineup, too. You want to start out on Sunday doing the same darn thing again, scoring some runs for your pitching staff, and that's where Lance Lynn can do the maybe the Kyle Gibson thing of, yeah, I'm going to pitch to the score a little bit. If I give up a solo home run, so be it. But if it's 5-0, and then it ends up being 5-1, 5-2, but I get an extra inning or two out of it to where you don't have to use another reliever, and you can focus on some of the guys that you have the most trust in down there, maybe that's the way to play it. Maybe that is the way that things could go for the Cardinals on Sunday. But for that to work, you've got a tough customer on the other side that you're going to have to get some runs off of. It's Jose Quintana, as we recall from his Cardinals days. He can be tough, man. He's 1-2 so far on the season. It's a 12:40 first pitch, St. Louis time. 1-2 with a 4.21 ERA in 25 innings, 20 strikeouts. Solid left-handed arm. Can some of these right-handed batters really get it going against Quintana early on Sunday? That would make a big difference for Lance Lynn. I had Lance Lynn's stats pulled up because I wanted to illustrate the point that he hasn't really been the innings eater just yet. Four innings in the game against the Dodgers. Cardinals were able to win that game, but you had him leave early because of the rain delay. Remember, that was when he had loaded the bases with nobody out in the first, and then he struck out the side. Against Miami and St. Louis, I think that was another one that was kind of rainy. 4 2/3. Or no, not that one. That was the home opener. 4 2/3, gave up the four runs. He just gave up some home runs. Jake Berger got him twice. I think one of them to Big Mac Land. It happens. The Philadelphia game, I think the next one was rainy, and so he was only able to go five. One of those two games where you had the rain consideration. But whatever the reasons and excuses, right? We don't make excuses. But Lynn's lines have been 4 2/3, 5, 7. So he did it once, the game in Oakland, where he went real deep. And then 5 again in the last start against Arizona. So he has not been hyper-efficient in the way that he's been able to get through some of these outings. The 5 innings against Arizona took 94 pitches, and he walked 3 batters. He also had 4 walks in the game against Philly, where he only went 5. And the opening day game, the home opener game, rather, in St. Louis, didn't even get through 5. That was the one that you'd say performance-wise they pulled him, because he gave up 4 earned runs, 3 home runs. And then the game against Oakland, he was hyper-efficient, didn't even strike anybody out because he didn't need to, just had his stuff working the way that he was able to get efficient with it and get through 7 innings as a result. But if tomorrow's start or Sunday's start, now that you're listening to this and it's game day, if Sunday's start against Arizona is another one where you walk 3 and you're having to really be fine with your pitches you're missing some locations, so you're getting the pitch count up, because it seems at times that Lance Lynn will do that. And it happened to him in the game against Arizona this past week. Cardinals won the game 5-3. That's great. Five innings pitched, seven hits, three walks. It's like every count feels like it's a 2-2 or a 3-2 count, and you end up using up 94 pitches in five innings. Striking out seven ties his season high. I think tomorrow needs to resemble a little bit more like the Oakland outing, where he only struck out one, gave up a solo homer, but was able to cruise and on 101 pitches get the team through seven. If he can go six and get him a quality start, and those right-handed bats can get to Jose Quintana, maybe the Cardinals are able to sweep this series. And in an ideal world, you get a four or more run lead, and you don't need to even fret about the fact that you don't have your seventh, eighth, and ninth men available. But just how good have they been? JoJo, Kittredge, and Ryan Helsley. Unbelievable stuff from those guys. And Helsley still has the stat. He's pitched in every game the Cardinals have won this season, which is now up to 13 games. It's a stat that goes back a month. March 28th was the first game of the season. So over the last month, and I know the Cardinals didn't win that first game, but that's been the story for Ryan Helsley, is he's pitched in every game the Cardinals have won, which is not something that is going to be sustainable if the team is going to make the playoffs. I think that's goes without saying, but I am going to say it anyway. As the Cardinals 13-14, they are still in last place, but only a half game behind Pittsburgh as I record here tonight. Two games back of Cincinnati, which is notable. It's early. It's like 1/6 of the way through the season. I believe I heard on KMOX they say today the season is 1/6 of the way through. But if you look in the National League playoff picture, the Phillies are playing really good baseball. They're 18-10. That's a wild card. Braves are ahead of them even in the NL East with the way they've been playing. Milwaukee's doing a great job, but the Cubs are now up to 17-10 for their record. So that's a wild card team. And oh, look over in the NL West. There is no wild card team above 500. The Padres are the second place team, just percentage points ahead of San Francisco, which we'll talk about Jordan Hicks maybe in a separate video at some point again soon. He just continues to steal. I think he had nine strikeouts on Saturday. Sorry about that, guys. Nine strikeouts in Jordan Hicks's outing Saturday. I think he went six innings, gave up like a run or something. But nevertheless, Padres Giants are below 500 as the second place team in the NL West, which means that the Reds would currently be the third wild card at 15-12. The Mets are 13-13, and the Cardinals are 13-14. Pirates are 14-14. So the Cardinals are two games back right now of a wild card spot. No, it's way too early. I get it to be talking about what the situations are. But just for anybody that has been sort of, I'm checked out because the Cardinals are in last place and they're not even close. Well, wild card, they're actually two games back of a wild card right now. So as early as it is, and as much as it's not time to talk about the wild card yet, that is something that I think I wanted to make sure to mention. As, yeah, maybe Sunday goes well and they're no longer in last place and you can kind of get that monkey off your back too. But let me know what you think, Cardinals fans, about the game Saturday, about what you're looking forward to from Sunday and whether Lance Lynn can bring it home. But it's unbelievable. I think the takeaway that I have, yeah, Sonny Gray was fantastic. I get it. The four runs he gave up. We kind of walked through that in a way that at least I look at it and go, yeah, the home run, Alonso beat him. It was not a bad pitch. It's different than throwing an 84-mile-per-hour changeup over the heart of the plate and saying, oh, hope he doesn't hit it really far. No, it was a pitch that was actually off the plate to Alonso, and he took it the other way and hit it out because in his defense of the way he talks about himself, he is a big, strong guy. He backed it up today. But Gray had nine strikeouts, nine Ks. He's got a 1.16 ERA, which, yeah, he's fortunate that you give up a two-run homer and four runs in the inning, but only one of those runs ends up being considered earned. That's just the way the cookie crumbles. But a 1.16 ERA, 32 Ks in 23 and a third innings. Sonny Gray is going to be on Cy watch if he continues pitching like this. That's my parting thought. Other than to say, just sit there and stare at the ERAs for Romero, Kittredge, and Helsley if you're feeling down about life in general and you're a Cardinals fan. Just look at those guys' ERAs right now because they are absolutely off the charts ridiculous. Probably won't see him Sunday, so we'll see what the Cardinals are able to do, presumably without them being able to contribute to a possible sweep. Will I get to send the tweet in favor of the Cardinals this time about how sweeps are not that hard? That's going to do it, though, for this edition of the show. Appreciate you guys, as always, for watching, listening, subscribing, and following in whatever platform and way that you choose to do so. Thank you guys so much, and we'll talk to you next time on BeSafe Daily. Peace.